It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
This is the RTC Weekly Download. We have three more programs for you to listen to today, and we're going to do a little bit of detective stuff, first of all. We're going to have the police in the form of the FBI. We'll follow that with Sam Spade, a private detective, and some music at the end by Frank Sinatra. But we'll start off now with the FBI and the intruder from December 28th of 1951.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented, transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community.
A-H-O. A-H-O.
Those are three important letters in the lives of thousands of homeowners. They stand for the Assured Home Ownership Plan of the Equitable Life Assurance Society, a money-saving, home-saving plan designed to speed the day when you say,
"Our mortgage is all paid off. We own our home free and clear."
Interested? Then please listen carefully in about 13 minutes for full information on the Equitable AHO plan. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, armed robbery. Its title, The Intruder.
The files of your FBI contain many instances of well-meaning men and women who get into trouble with the law merely by associating with criminals. Usually, their intentions were harmless enough, perhaps even noble. Many people who would never dream of committing a crime themselves nevertheless seek excitement by consorting with those who do. Psychologists might say they are seeking vicarious substitute thrills. Others like to try their hand at reforming criminals. We of the FBI applaud their good motives, but deplore their lack of common sense. Rehabilitating criminals is a job for experts. Remember that even the experts are by no means always successful. Your FBI urges you strongly to leave criminals to those whose job it is to reform them or apprehend them. Tonight's case points out vividly the possible danger of not doing so. Tonight's FBI file opens at a winter resort located in an eastern state. In an isolated cottage off the main highway, a girl sits waxing a pair of skis. Another girl comes out of the bedroom.
Ruthie?
Yeah, honey?
Mind if I wear your gold earrings?
No, go ahead.
Thanks. What time is it?
Just 8:30.
Good.
Turn around. Let's see how you look.
Well?
You look lovely.
Thanks.
In fact, you look so lovely, I hate to see it wasted.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean, Ann. Guy you're going out with.
Now, don't start that again. You don't even know Al.
I know his reputation.
Oh, Ruth.
I got the whole story on him the other night.
I know. He's a racketeer. He's no good. You told me all that.
Doesn't that matter?
Look, Ruth, I spend 50 weeks a year slaving in an office. My dates are usually a friend of my brother's or the boy next door.
So?
So this is a vacation. 2 short weeks away from that endless dull routine, and I'm going to make the most of it.
With Al?
Yes, with Al. Ruthie, it's fun to be with him. It's exciting.
Sure, sure.
We go the best places. Everybody knows him. We get the best table.
And
when we
listen to me a minute, will you?
Well,
I know how you feel. Believe me, I do. But just let me say something.
Go ahead.
When I was your age, a date with a guy like Al would have been exciting to me, too. But as you grow up, you learn things.
Mm-hmm.
You learn that fellas you pick up at a dance, at a resort, who act like big shots like Al, don't run 1-2-6 with that friend of your brother's or the boy next door. End of sermon.
Ruthie, you're awfully sweet. But don't worry about me, will you? Oh, that must be Al now. Oh?
Is Al Benton here?
No.
You expect him, don't you?
Well, yes.
Then I'll come in and wait.
Well, I...
And who is that?
I don't know.
What?
Just the two of you here?
What do you want?
Al Benton.
I told you he isn't here.
I'll wait.
Well, now, just a minute. Wait, that's why you...
I said I'd wait.
Meanwhile, in the teletype room at an FBI field office in a nearby city, Special Agent Jim Taylor watches the machines as Agent Bob Warren approaches.
Jim, how about some dinner?
Oh, no thanks, Bob. I've got to stick around.
Something special?
Yeah, I'm waiting for a report from Washington.
What about?
Some fingerprints I sent back there this morning by wire photo.
Hmm.
They're on that central bank holdup.
What's the story?
Well, two men held up the cashier of the bank, took over $8,000. The car they used was found about 4 hours later across the state line.
How about the two men?
One of them was still in the car.
Good?
No, not so good. He was dead. Shot through the heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the money?
No sign of it.
Had there been any gunplay in the holdup?
No, I believe he was killed by his partner. That's the usual loyalty of one thief to another.
Any identification?
Dead man was named Johnson. At least that's one of his aliases. Habitual criminal. Long record.
How about the one that got away?
Well, I've got a fair description on him, but I'm hoping for more than that. I picked up some prints in the car in the back of the rearview mirror.
Johnson?
No, I've already checked that.
Are those the ones you sent to Washington?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, wish you luck, Jim.
Thanks.
Can I bring you back a sandwich?
Yeah, will you? Ham and cheese on rye. Tastes fine.
Coffee?
Yeah, black, please.
Anything else?
Oh, that's all.
Hey, where are you going?
Into the kitchen.
What for?
I want to make some coffee.
Just stay where you are.
Then will you do us one favor? Will you put that gun away?
Not till after I use it.
Please, what's this all about?
I'm waiting for Al.
Why?
You'll see.
You're going to shoot him, aren't you?
That's right.
Oh, couldn't you pick someplace else?
No.
Why not?
Because I know he's coming here. Hey, what time is it?
Almost 9:15.
He was due at 9?
Yes.
Well, remember what I told you. When he knocks, you answer the door. Ask him right in and don't rumble.
I can't do it.
You'd better, sweetheart, or all of you get it.
Would you mind telling us why you want to kill him?
My brother and Al were partners. They pulled a stick up yesterday.
What?
After they'd done the job, Al knocked my brother off, beat it with the dough.
How do you know all this?
Grapevine. I even know he's planning to lam out of town tonight. Take this dame here with him.
Ann, is that true?
Yes.
Oh.
But I didn't know anything about this other stuff. Honest, Ruth.
Oh, baby.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't answer that till I tell you what to do.
But I...
If that's Al, you tell him to come right over here. And don't give him no office that anything's wrong. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. Answer it.
Hello?
Is that you, Ann?
Yes, Al.
Honey, I got tied up here down at the inn. Let me send a cab for you, huh?
Well, I...
We can leave from here.
I'd rather not, Al.
Why not?
I'd rather you called for me.
Well, it'll be another hour.
That's all right.
Okay. See you later, honey. Bye.
Bye.
Is he coming?
Yes.
That's swell.
No two investigations are ever exactly alike, because no two crimes are ever perfect duplicates. On some cases, an agent works for days, weeks, and sometimes even months before he finds a lead, before he begins to unravel the tangled web of evidence. And then there are those other cases. Cases where the first night's work produces an avalanche of results. Cases such as this one.
One combination on Rye coming up.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
Here's your coffee.
Oh, great.
Anything break?
Yeah, plenty. Report on those fingerprints came in right after you left.
Were they identified?
Yeah. Belonged to a small-time racketeer named Al Benton.
Al Benton. That name's familiar.
Yeah. We had him in here for questioning on that liquor hijacking case last year, you remember?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, I dug out his picture. Williams took it over to the central bank. He just called. Clerks identified Benton as one of the two bandits.
Well, you have been moving.
That isn't all.
There's more?
Yeah. I started a quick check on Benton. I found out he'd been living in a hotel over on 12th Street, but he'd moved over a month ago.
They know where he's gone?
Well, he didn't leave a forwarding address, but the hotel porter remembered shipping his trunk to an inn out at Snake Hill.
That's a ski resort.
Yeah. Well, there are only two inns out there, and the first one I called told me that Mr. Al Benton was one of their guests.
And all this happened when I was out to dinner.
Well, that's the way it goes, Bob. You spend endless hours waiting, and then, wham, everything breaks at once.
I suppose now you're headed for Snake Hill.
Oh? We're heading for Snake Hill.
What?
Yeah, the SAC put you on the case, too, Bob. Let's go.
Hey, you. Sit down. Relax.
Are you kidding?
Sit down, I said.
Okay.
Look, I can't stand this much longer.
Now, don't you start again.
I can't help it.
I don't want no crying going when he shows here. What time is it now?
10:15.
Should be here.
Listen, I believe what you told us about Al killing your brother to be true. But why do you try to settle the score? Turn him over to the police and let the law settle it for you.
I do this my way.
Yeah, but...
I don't want to hear no more about it.
Wait.
What's the matter?
There's the headlights of a car coming up the hill.
That's your private road, ain't it? No other cabins on it?
No.
Okay. This is it.
Oh, no, no.
Shut up! Now listen to me, both of you. When he knocks, Ann here answers the door.
He's almost here.
Invite the guy to come right in. I'll take care of the rest.
The car's out front. It stopped.
Did you hear what I told you?
Yes.
I'll have your girlfriend here with me. If you make the wrong move, it'll be just too bad for her.
Just a minute. There's no one here. Well, there's no one out there.
What is this?
I tell you, nobody's there.
You're lying.
No, she ain't, Chuck.
Huh?
Lucky I saw him through the window. That's why I come in from the back.
We will return in just a minute to tonight's exciting case from the official file, which shows how your FBI helps promote America's security. And now listen to three letters that spell security for many thousands of homeowners. A-H-O.
A is for assured.
H is for home.
O is for ownership.
Put these three words together, and you have the famous Assured Home Ownership Plan of the Equitable Society. It's known as America's finest plan of home ownership, because it includes benefits not always found in other mortgage plans.
First benefit, an equitable AHO plan gives you a way to pay off your mortgage years ahead of time.
In other words, one of the primary purposes of this plan is to hasten the day when you can sit back and tell yourself,
my mortgage is paid off in full. I own my house free and clear.
How does this happen? Well, it's very simple. Equitable AHO gives you a low-cost first mortgage teamed up with life insurance. One monthly payment takes care of both.
Thanks to the insurance element, a constantly growing cash loan fund is created. Year by year, the mortgage grows smaller and the cash loan fund larger until it's actually big enough to pay off what's left of the mortgage. Imagine paying off a 20-year mortgage in about 14 years. That's what hundreds of AHO owners have actually done.
Second benefit of an Equitable Assured Home Ownership Plan. If the owner dies, his widow doesn't inherit a mortgage. She inherits the home free and clear.
Not only that, in addition to canceling the mortgage, the Equitable Society also returns to the widow every cent her husband has paid to reduce the principal.
Last but not least, an AHO mortgage draws interest at only 4%.
So all in all, a man may count himself fortunate if his age, income, health, and the location of his home enable him to qualify for an Equitable Assured Home Ownership Plan. For full information, see your Equitable Society representative or write care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society. Remember, the sooner you start an Equitable Assured Home Ownership Plan, the sooner you'll be able to say,
no mortgage on our home. We own it free and clear.
And now back to the FBI file, The Intruder.
A remark made by Agent Taylor tonight is worth repeating. He said, I believe he was killed by his partner. That's the usual loyalty of one thief to another. If that comment seems hard-boiled, remember that your FBI agents know criminals. Not by reading about them in books, but from personal contact. FBI men know that the saying, there's honor among thieves, just isn't true in the vast majority of cases. Criminals are out for themselves and themselves alone. Even the code against squealing, so strong among young hoodlums, is often violated when they're caught, when they're safe behind locked doors, when they want to save their own hides. Those who work behind the scenes in children's courts know this all too well. Your FBI is convinced there is no code a criminal will abide by unless it's to his advantage to do so. Being romantic or sentimental about the underworld shows a complete ignorance of the facts. Your first approach to understanding crime in America is to become a realist. Stop sentimentalizing either crime or criminals. Tonight's FBI file continues back at the cabin. The two terrified girls stand staring at the body of the dead hoodlum.
He's dead.
That's right, baby.
Al, you killed him.
What else could I do? He was out to get me.
I'm calling the police.
Now, wait a minute.
We've been through enough here tonight.
Get away from that phone.
Oh, no. Operator.
Get away, I said.
Operator. Al!
This ain't no time to be calling cops.
You sheep hoodlum.
And make your girlfriend behave here, will you?
Get out of here, Al.
Huh?
I said get out.
Hey, what is this? We got a date, remember?
I found out all about you tonight. What you really are, and I don't want any part of it.
Now, wait, baby.
Keep away from me.
Oh, no. You're coming with me anyway.
She is not.
Look, you both know too many things about me now, so let's go out the car, huh?
No.
Come on. I'll make up my mind what to do with you along the way.
The time element is an important factor in every case, especially in a case like this, a case involving murder. In that respect, the criminal enjoys the early advantage. Enjoys it because he can move with almost reckless haste, move quickly and easily. The special agents of your FBI, though, move cautiously, for they must take one step at a time, hoping each step will bring them closer, closer to the killer.
That looks like the door to the lobby down there at the end of the porch.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Snake Hill Inn has seen better days.
Definitely.
Here we are. I'll get it. Go ahead, Bob.
Thanks. Well, this is certainly a busy place.
Yeah, they like canaries.
Do you suppose they could tell us where the proprietor is?
There's a bell over in the desk. It might be a help. Come on.
Okay.
All that did is stop the concert. Well, try it again.
Coming. Coming. Oh, what can I do for you, gentlemen?
Are you in charge here?
I'm the proprietor, yes. Oh,
we're special agents of the FBI.
Oh.
Here are our credentials.
Well, why are you here?
We'd like to talk to one of your guests, a man named Al Benton.
Oh, you're too late.
Well, what do you mean?
He checked out of here just about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, where'd he go?
I don't know, and to be frank with you, I don't care. I was very happy to see him leave.
Why?
He was a most unsavory person.
Tell me, sir, did he have a car?
Yeah.
Well, would anyone around here know where he was going?
No. Oh, wait a minute.
Well?
I recall something about a girl he was going to meet.
Yes, go on.
Yes, she lives in one of the cabins up the hill.
And do you know her name?
No, sir.
Do you know which cabin?
No, I don't.
Then where did you get this information?
He ordered a taxi to be sent up for her. Then he changed his mind and went himself.
Well, if he ordered the cab, he must have told the driver what cabin to go to.
Say, that's right. I'll check with my phone operator. She put the call in. Excuse me, please.
Certainly.
If he left here 10 minutes ago, that's not too much of a start.
No. No, we could still get lucky and nail him at the girl's cabin.
Mm. That is, if we could find out which cabin it is.
Yeah, you're so right.
Well, Chapman, I believe I have the information you've been seeking.
Good.
The girl's name is Ann Madison. Uh-huh. The cabin is less than a mile from here.
Can you tell us how to get there, please?
Yeah, follow the road out front as far as you can go.
Well, in which direction?
Oh, to the left.
Fine, thank you.
Cabin is on the hill. There's a driveway leading up there.
Fine, thank you, sir. Come on, Bob.
Stay right there by the car, both of you. I'm dumping this baby back here in the snowbank.
Ruthie?
Yeah, honey?
Do you think we should try to run away?
Not now, not here. He's too quick with that gun.
But we'll never get away from him.
Yes, we will.
I hope you're right. Oh, Ruth, forgive me, please.
For what?
This terrible mess. It's all my fault.
Look, we'll get out of it some way.
I know,
Shh.
And
then...
I want you both to sit in front with me here.
Okay.
And, look, let's get a few things straight before we take off. We'll be passing other cars, other people, maybe cops. Don't try to tip them off about our little party or you'll both be sorry. All right, now get in.
Go ahead, Ann.
Now, wait a minute.
Hmm?
That car down there at the foot of the hill just turned in your driveway.
Car coming up here?
Yeah. Listen, both of you, whoever it is, I want you to get rid of him fast. I'm going to hide here in my car, and if either one of you blows a whistle, this gun goes off.
Hello.
Hello.
We're looking for a Miss Ann Madison.
I'm Ann Madison.
Oh, we're special agents of the FBI.
Oh?
Yes, we were informed that a Mr. Al Benton was on his way up here to see you.
Al Benton?
Yes, that's right. You know him?
Sure,
she knows him. He's here.
Ooh.
I don't care. We've been kicked around enough. Look, if you want Al Benton, he's right...
Look out!
Get on,
over!
Anyone hurt?
No.
Is Benton in that car?
Yes.
Come on, Bob. We don't seem to be gaining on him.
I know.
If only this road would straighten out.
I think it does after this bend. He's turning left out to the peninsula.
Stay with him.
Can't even see him now.
Wait until we get over this hill.
If I remember right, there's a fork in the road up ahead.
Yep, there it is.
And no Benton.
Turn right! There are his tire tracks.
I still don't see him.
Just keep going.
that the municipal airport up ahead?
Yeah, that's it.
Look, there's his car now, turning into the airport gate.
I figured he'd head for here and try to get a plane out.
Uh-huh.
Give it everything you've got, Bob. We've got to stop him before he does board a plane.
Bob.
Yeah?
We're going to have to be plenty careful on this one.
With guns, you mean?
Yeah, there's too many people around here.
Well...
Wait a minute.
You see him?
Yeah, there he is. Up there. See by gate 4. Come on. He's seen us, Bob.
Yeah.
He's running through the gate. Let's step on it.
You think we should alert the field?
We haven't got time. I don't see him.
No.
I suppose he headed for those hangars down there?
He couldn't get to them that fast. What'll we do, Jim? We can't lose him now.
I know, I know. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Look out there. There he is, running across the field.
Yeah.
Bob, wait! Look at that fool. There's a plane taking off. He doesn't see it. He's running right across his path. Ben! Ben, look out! Look out! I'd say the file on Al Benton is closed.
The death of Al Benton saved the cost of trying him on a charge of murder and allowed your FBI to stamp the word closed across his file. In that respect, what Agent Taylor said was true. The Al Benton file was closed. In a larger sense, though, it still remains open and will continue to be open as long as there are men like Al Benton alive and free. Your FBI and other law enforcement agencies can try to apprehend those others, but only after they have committed their crimes, their vicious, desperate crimes. Your job lies in the field of crime prevention, in the wiping out of the Al Benton breed. In that task, you may have the advice and aid, the cooperation of police officers everywhere. But the real work must be done by you. By you in whatever your role might be. Parent, citizen, or just plain decent human being interested in making your community a better place in which to live. Now a quick review of two advantages of the Equitable Assured Home Ownership Plan.
First, the mortgage bears interest at only 4%.
Second, the plan provides for a cash loan fund that may be used to pay off a 20-year mortgage in about 14 years. For further information about the Assured Home Ownership Plan, see your Equitable Society representative or send a postcard care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society. Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its subject, armed robbery. Its title, The Toy Bandit. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Richard Crenna, Lamont Johnson, Joyce McCluskey, Paul Richards, John Sheehan, and Peggy Weber. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling transcribed story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Toy Bandit on This Is Your FBI. Stay tuned for the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. There's fun for the whole family when Ozzie and Harriet come your way next.
This program came to you from Hollywood.
Now, it's time for that rough-and-tumble private detective, Sam Spade. This is called the Hot 100 Grand Caper, and it's from 1948.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Agency.
This is Sam, Blackleg Spade, the third most dangerous gambler on the Barbary Coast.
Oh, Sam, not horses again.
Horses, women, and the gaming tables, Evie. The diversions of the elite.
Well, divert yourself with this, Sam. The phone company has sent the pink notice.
Uh-huh. Pay it no mind, sweetheart. We are healed. We have hit the cashier's cage, annexed the pot, broken the bank, and we're standing on velvet.
Sam, are you sober?
Definitely velvet. Warm, too.
Sam, from where are you calling from?
You're wrong, Effie. It's a drugstore. Stay where you are. I'll be right down to deal out my report on the Hot 100 Grand Caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. It's smart to buy things the whole family can use, isn't it? That's why I say it's smart to buy Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. To mom, to dad, to the children, Wild Root Cream Oil is really a friend indeed. Non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil with lanolin grooms the hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, removes loose, ugly dandruff. I hope you have a big family-sized bottle of Wild Root Cream Oil in your home. Get Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Date, September 19, 1948, to robbery detail, San Francisco Police. Attention, Sergeant Walsh. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596, Dear Joe. Here's the rundown on that Hot 100 Grand. It started pleasantly enough when my secretary, Miss Effie Perrine, cute little mouse, eased into my private office, closed the door behind her, and leaned back against it with that air of pained resignation which generally means there's a customer outside that she doesn't approve of, but that I'll see her anyway.
It's up to you, Sam. She's very well dressed, and I imagine she can afford you.
How do you deduce that?
Well, she dropped her purse. I didn't get time to count it all, but there was $100 bill on top.
Well, sure, in, Effie.
Sam.
Go ahead, say it.
Oh, I don't know, Sam. Sometimes, well, there's just money.
No. No, that's one of the reasons I hire you. What's the matter with it?
Nothing. That's just it, Sam. She's very good-looking, cultivated, and very kind and considerate. And she seems sincerely troubled.
You mean her act is a little too good?
I felt that too, Sam.
Thanks, Angel. I'll keep that in mind. Tell her to come in.
All right, Sam. Mr. Spade will see you, Mrs. Kilcourse.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing me, Mr. Spade.
My pleasure. Won't you sit down?
Oh, thank you. I'm Lorraine Kilcourse, Mr. Spade. It's about my husband, Leonard Kilcourse.
Husband? Oh.
We've only been married a short time. It was a quiet ceremony at the San Cedro Mission. Mm-hmm. Leonard didn't want to subject me to any publicity. The difference in our ages, you know?
You mean you want me to keep it a secret?
Oh, no. No, except for the newspapers, of course. Naturally, all of Leonard's friends know.
Well, he doesn't have many, from what I've heard.
I've thought it strange, too, that such a prominent man should have such a small circle of acquaintances. I met him only a short time before I married him. He's been very kind and absolutely devoted to me, and I suppose I should feel ashamed of myself for coming to you. But there are so many things about him that are mysterious that I can't seem to find my handkerchief.
Here. Kleenex.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
I take it you're not a San Francisco girl.
No. No, I met him at a dude ranch.
Well, maybe I can clear up some of your mysteries for free. The reason your husband doesn't have many friends is because they keep dropping dead.
I don't understand you.
Forget it. He's a big public servant. He's built a lot of sidewalks. The streets of this city are paved with his good intentions. His name is on 1,000 manhole covers. If the names of his former business associates land on headstones, it's nothing to me. I got my own racket. Well, what?
I think my husband is paying blackmail to someone.
Uh-huh. And upon what do you base your suspicions, Mrs. Kay?
It started about a month ago. He began withdrawing large sums from our joint account. First, it was $10,000, then $20,000, and last week, $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning, he closed out the balance of the account. $100,000.
Yeah, well, he's got it to spend, Mrs. Kilcourt.
Well, I won't pretend the money doesn't interest me, but what's behind it, Mr. Spade? Each time he withdraws these cash sums, he leaves the house without a word to me. And sometimes doesn't return until dawn. My husband is not fond of nightlife, Mr. Spade. Only a desperate situation could induce him to leave the house after dark.
Yeah, so I've heard. They say that's how he kept his health as long as he has. All right, you want me to trail him, find out what he does with the money. Just one question. Why'd you pick me for the job?
Why, your reputation...
That's local. You say you're new in San Francisco.
Well, I do read the local papers. Your picture was in only 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that caper didn't help my reputation.
I like your looks. A nice, honest face. A man I could trust.
Well, don't buy that.
And I'm sentimental, too. Your picture reminded me of someone who was very dear to me. My brother. Of course, you're nothing like him, really, but you do look alike. I suppose that sounds like a silly woman's reason for...
Yeah. What's your address?
Well, I have a little place of my own out on Divisadero. The Balboa Apartments near Normandy Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
You'd better keep in touch with me there. I don't want Leonard to know. The Kilcourt mansion is at 1316 Clarendon.
1316. Mm-hmm.
He returns from his office around 6 in the evening. Do you have a car?
No. I need one?
Well, I don't know where he may go. Now, here are the keys to my car. It's parked in front of the main entrance, a gray Plymouth. He won't recognize the car. It's my brother's. Now, about your fee.
$100 now. If I need more, I'll leave you now. I had an uneasy feeling I would need more. The last detective that tried to follow Leonard Kilcourt had hospital insurance. I don't. But I'm a gambler at heart, so I parked Lorraine's Plymouth across the street from the Kilcourt mansion and waited. At 9 in the p.m., Mr. Kilcourt, much, much too old for her, came out the front door and flagged down a taxi. I made an illegal U-turn and followed. The trail ended across the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County. It was a country club-type building on top of a hill overlooking the bay. It did business under the name of Ernie Nogales' Racket Club. The racket had nothing to do with tennis. It came from two sources: the moans and groans of the customers losing money at the roulette wheels and crap tables, and the glad hand the management threw at my quarry as I followed him in.
Well, Mr. Kilcourt, surprised to see you. Since when you go out after dark?
Well, I thought a little nightlife might agree with me, Nogales.
Oh, that sounds like you, Mr. Kilcourt. I didn't know you better. I think you was afraid to go out night.
Well, now, I was thinking of buying this place to retire to.
Ah.
But I figured it'd be cheaper to win it at your roulette table. What's your limit here?
$10,000, but for you, wide open, the sky.
A hot $100,000 for a starter?
Well, any time they catch you with hot money, Mr. Kilcourt. Come over to the cashier. I sell you the chips myself.
I didn't have to bother making myself inconspicuous. Everybody in the joint stopped playing to watch Kilcourt while he shoved his $100,000 roll through the cashier's window and scooped up 4 stacks of 1,000-buck chips.
Make your bets, please.
All right, you. Spin that wheel.
Huh? How much you got there?
$25,000. Any objections?
Is that okay, Mr. Nogales?
Spin it, Joe. I'm covering through the table personally.
Okay, sir. Around and round the little ball goes. 15 pay, 15 and the red.
Maybe next time, Mr. Kilcourt. Why don't you double up, play the red and the black? It's safer.
I'll stay with the numbers. 50,000 on 15. There, spin it.
It's okay, Joe. I'm still covering.
Well, It's your money, Mr. Nogales. Number four pays. Number four and the red again.
$25,000 more on 15.
Look, Mr. Kilcoyne, go on, enjoy yourself, take it off your income tax, but please spend those, spread them out a little there, those chips, huh? Looks bad for the house.
What kind of a joint is this? Can't you cover the bets?
Okay, Joe. He asked for it.
Okay, sir.
I didn't wait to see where the little ball went on the last spin of the wheel. I would have made a side bet with any taker that Kilcoyne wanted to lose that $100,000. I would also have made bookie knew I was following him. As I left the table and walked out of the club, I braced myself for what usually comes next. There would either be a dead body in the car or somebody would crease my noggin with a sap. But nothing happened. I switched on the headlights and stood in the glare of them for fully a minute, but nobody even shot at me. I flushed the shrubbery. No gunman. Checked the ignition wires. No booby traps. Driving back to town, I racked my brain for some way to bring them out into the open. I felt like a man with his life savings all on one number waiting for the wheel to stop spinning, which wasn't far from the truth. Not much of a cliffhanger, but the best we could do this week.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Now, here's important news on good grooming. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. Get Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too. And mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. And now, back to the hot $100,000 caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Yeah?
This Mrs. Kilcoyne's apartment?
Yeah.
She here?
Yeah.
Well, can I come in?
Yeah.
Tommy?
Yeah.
Who is that, Mr. Spade?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the detective I was telling you about, Tommy, remember?
Yeah.
The one who looked so much like you?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, excuse me, this is my brother, Tommy Lane.
Yeah, I mean,
Tommy, won't you run down to the corner and buy me some cigarettes for about 20 minutes? I have something to talk over with Mr. Spade.
Yeah.
Nice boy, your brother. Small vocabulary, but big feet.
Well, he's shy. Now, what did you find out about my husband, Mr. Spade?
He dropped $100,000 in a gambling joint. Ernie Nogales' racket club. You know it?
No, but I know Ernie Nogales. I knew him in Reno before I met Leonard. He lost his license there for running a crooked wheel.
The way Kilcoyne was playing tonight, that wheel didn't have to be crooked. He was trying to lose that $100,000.
But why? Why would he do a thing like that?
One of two reasons. Either he's paying off to Nogales or he's paying off to somebody else, and Nogales is the go-between.
Well, I don't believe it. Ernie is a crooked gambler, but he doesn't touch blackmail.
And your husband isn't stupid enough to drop $100,000 in 3 turns of a wheel. Anyway, I'm not tangling with him and or the Ernie Nogales mob for $100 of your money or anybody else's. Here, take it.
Well,
and here are your car keys.
No, no, wait, please. You can't desert me now.
Why not?
Well, I haven't told you everything. I'd hoped I wouldn't have to.
About your brother?
How did you know?
The only place you get a green suntan is in a pokey. Besides, he acts kind of stir-crazy. Spent a little time in solitary, didn't he?
He won't talk about it. But that's it, Sam. That's why Leonard is paying that blackmail money to Nogales.
You just said Nogales wouldn't touch blackmail. Any other corrections you'd like to make in your copy before we proceed?
Yes. Well, I might as well tell you everything.
Why not?
I knew when I came to you this morning that my husband was paying this money to Nogales. I knew because I asked him to.
You and Ernie Nogales are working together?
I'm not that rotten.
I didn't say you were, but you're a rotten liar. There's that much in your favor.
But I'm telling the truth now, Sam. You must believe me. Everything that has happened is my fault. I persuaded Nogales to give my brother a job in his place in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
They quarreled, and when he got closed down, he blamed Tommy. He swore he'd kill him when he got out of prison. That's why I begged my husband to pay him to save Tommy's life.
Who did rat on Nogales about that crooked wheel in Reno?
I did. That's why I feel responsible. Leonard is so fine, so generous. But I can't let him go on paying for my mistake.
Yeah, like you said, he's going to run out of money.
Look at me, Sam. Do I look like the kind of a woman to whom money means everything in the world?
No, but you're looking at me, not at Kilcourse.
You're laughing at me. Oh, I know what you think. Perhaps I did make a mistake in marrying Leonard, but he was so kind, so considerate, like my father.
Everybody reminds you of your relatives.
You don't believe my story?
Well, since you asked.
Well, all right, then, here's the truth. I'm really Jack the Ripper's granddaughter. My parents were terribly wealthy. I harpooned my mother in her Beverly Hills swimming pool, set fire to my father with a $50,000 negotiable bond, and eloped with John Wilkes Booth. That brings us up to 1865. Shall I go on?
Don't stop. It's great.
Oh, get out of here. Get out of here and leave me alone.
After you've told me all your secrets, I'm not that rotten.
You won't help me. You never intended to. Why go on torturing
me? Oh, now, stop that. Please. I believe you. I believe all your stories. Now, what is my next smart move?
Sam, the only way to stop Ernie Nogales is to prove that he's running a crooked wheel. And then he'd pay back all that blackmail money, and he wouldn't dare lay a hand on Tommy.
Well, it's going to be hard to prove and expensive. Oh, but I'll have to lose a little on that wheel before I can figure the way it's rigged. How much can you invest?
Well, I have about $1,000 of my own.
With you?
Yes. Here, you take it.
Smells nice.
Sam.
Yeah?
Sam, after all this is over, and after I've put things to right with Leonard, I should have told him before this, but I owed him so much, Oh, Sam, I'm so glad it's you.
Yeah. Me too, Angel.
Go now, darling, before I beg you not to.
What time does that joint close?
Well, it runs all night, I think.
Good. Let's stay up late and raid the icebox. Around 2 in the a.m., when I low-geared the Plymouth up the long, steep driveway to Ernie Nogales' racket club, backed into the parking space nearest the road with a car headed downhill for a quick getaway just in case, and I went in. The joint was still going full blast. I bought $500 worth of chips, swaggered over to the table where Kilcourse had dropped his $100,000, and nonchalantly flipped the blue chip onto the red.
Appalachia betcha, ladies and gentlemen. Make your game. Okay, that's all. Around and round the little ball goes.
I didn't look to see where the little ball went. Most of the money was on red, so it was bound to turn up black.
A red pays.
What?
Number 15. Place your bets, please. Make your game, ladies and gentlemen. Around and round it goes.
The chips were spread around more the next turn, so I stacked 100 at the bottom of the 1 to 34 column. With a crooked wheel, my 100 made it the best bet to lose.
And 19, and the red wins again.
Hey! I plunked 500 down on number 5 and raked in 17,500. I left my original bet on the table. When the little ball fell into the pocket, I was $35,000 to the good from my point of view, but not for my clients. I doubled my bet and looked apprehensively around. There were no surly characters edging up behind me. In fact, the only surly character in sight was Ernie Nogales, and he looked happy. That didn't make much sense. When my bankroll got to $105,000, I played a hunch. I threw $5,000 of it back on the table and lost it. That made a kind of sense. I cashed in the rest of my chips and squeezed the $100,000 U.S. currency into my inside pocket. If anybody aimed for my heart, it was thick enough to stop the slug, which was some comfort.
But what I saw when I walked out to the parking lot was no comfort at all. I'd gotten just a glimpse of it through some trees. A sedan backed into a driveway halfway down the hill. It was blacked out except for five glowing cigar ends that showed through the windows. I could think of only one reason for five cigar smokers to be parked in that particular spot at that particular moment. The Plymouth is where I had parked it, pointing straight down the hill. I slammed the door but didn't get in. And I listened. The car down the hill was getting ready, too. I cracked the door of the Plymouth wide enough to get my arm inside and pressed the starter with the heel of my hand. I switched on the lights, pushed the clutch with my left hand, used my right to shift it into low, then I pulled the hand throttle out all the way and let it go.
What's the big idea busting into my office?
We're going to have a talk, Nogales.
Please, don't wave that heater at me. It makes me nervous. I don't like guns.
I don't either. That's why I'm here. Put your hands on top of the desk and keep them there.
All right. Give me back that roll. I give you clean money for it. It was a gamble, so I lost. Can you blame me?
Where'd you get this money?
I buy it. 50 cents on the dollar. I don't ask where it came from, but I read the papers. I figure it was that shipyard payroll job a few days back. Like it just fell in my lap. I figured it'd make 50 grand instead of kill course 5. I guess that was dirty trick you just out of stir, Tommy, huh?
I had news for you, Nogales. I didn't know this money was hot, and I am not Tommy Lane.
No? Then what?
Private Dick. Tommy's sister hired me to take the fall for him. Look, I got most of the caper. Kilcourse wanted to pay Tommy 100 grand. You rigged the wheel so Kilcourse would lose it one night and Tommy would win it back the next night. Now, what was Kilcourse paying him off for?
No caper, legitimate. He was sent up for bribing a public official.
You mean he was the payoff man for Kilcourse's contracting firm?
Sure, legitimate business. The grand jury went out after Kilcourse. Tommy took the rap, that's all, for a price.
Yeah, 100 grand. Thanks, Nogales. That's all I needed.
Oh, Sam, I was afraid I might be too late.
You are, sweetheart.
Oh, I have so many things to explain. Where can you talk?
Right in here.
But who's this man?
Why, that's your old sweetie from Reno, Ernie Nogales, remember?
What's the matter with you two? You crazy?
Oh, Sam, I should have told you the truth from the beginning.
Check. The Nogales yarn, I can understand, but why did you tell me you were Kilcourse's wife?
I was desperate. I had to say something. It was the only explanation I could think of for my interest in this case without telling the truth.
But you were making a pigeon out of me.
I don't know about such things, Sam. All I know is I'm here in time to warn you. You mustn't walk out of here with that money.
Listen.
They may kill you to get it back.
They already did. They're combing the wreckage of that car right now, looking for my body.
Then Tommy was right. They did mean to kill him.
How'd he get the rumble?
While he was in prison, from another man that Kilcourse framed. He was in for life, so it was safe for him to talk.
Hey, you two. Oh.
Yeah, Nogales?
That car that just drove up. I think that's Mr. Kilcourse.
Oh, I...
Hey, what's your hurry?
Let me go! Let me go!
Come on, what's your hurry?
Tommy's out there in that cab. I've got to warn him.
Or a tip-off Kilcourse. Which is it?
No, Sam, you've got to believe me.
Sit down. Stop that.
You two have fun. I'm getting out of here.
Go ahead. Now, listen, sweet Lorraine. You may as well save your breath for those explanations. You're staying right here until the caper's all wrapped up.
Here he comes. Have you got a gun, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, you'd better have it ready.
Mm-mm.
But, Sam...
Where's Nogales? I want to see him.
He was called out of town, sir. I'm in charge. You Mr. Kilcourse?
That's right. I want to know why you people have been interfering with my business. It might interest you to know that this building site's on an old Spanish land grant. Title's very shaky. I'll run an 8-lane highway straight through the middle of it and turn the rest of it into a game preserve. That's what I do to people who double-cross me.
I tried to tell Mr. Nogales that, sir. He wouldn't listen to me. He tipped Tommy off for a split of the 100 grand, but I knew sooner or later we'd have to answer to you, Mr. Kilcourse.
Oh, well, what's that?
Here's your 100 grand, sir. Count it.
Sam.
Well. What's your name, son?
Sam Spade, sir.
Well, I'm glad to meet an honest lad. Well, come along. You too, young lady. We'll all walk out together.
Sam,
Shut up.
Spade, huh?
Yes, sir. I'm a private detective, but I'm ambitious.
Politics?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll run you for assembly. In the meantime, I believe there's an opening in one of the public services. Garbage disposal. Executive end, of course. Where the devil is that man with my car? Oh, there he is. Now, you drop around to my office in the morning.
Thank you, and good night, Mr. Kilcross. Yes.
Drive on, Horace. Back to the city.
Oh, Sam. How could you? All those lies and just handing over the money like that. It wasn't yours.
It wasn't Tommy's either, sweetheart. Get in.
Well, Tommy, are you all right?
Yeah.
Drive us across the bridge, Tommy, will you?
Yeah.
Tommy.
Yeah?
Tommy, I'm afraid we'll have to do without the money.
Yeah?
Sam gave it to Mr. Kilcorse.
Yeah?
Now, don't get excited, Tommy. I'm sure Sam had a reason. Didn't you, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, that was marked money from a payroll job.
Oh, then it won't do him any good.
It'll send him up for a good long stretch if the eyewitness story that goes along with it is good enough. And you're just the girl to tell it, sweetheart. Am I right, Tommy?
Yeah.
Period, end of report.
Already? But Sam...
Yeah?
What happened? Who were the five men in the car, the ones who shot at that Plymouth in the mistaken belief that you were in it?
Their names are of little account, Effie. Suffice it to say that Kilcorse pointed his pudgy finger at them in the hopes of keeping the charge of attempted murder out of his indictment. But I was too clever. I identified them.
But Sam, you didn't see anything but their cigars glowing in the darkness.
Have you never heard of Sherlock Holmes' monograph on the 49 varieties of tobacco ash, you fool?
Oh, but Sam, Sherlock Holmes is only the segment of someone's imagination. He's a fictional detective.
Well?
You mean... Oh, Sam, you're tired.
Yes, I am.
It's affected your mind, winning all that money. Now, you just sit here and rest.
All right.
Think of the snowy mountaintops and blue skies.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just go and type this up.
Snowy mountaintops. Winter sports yet.
And now, listen to this. If you haven't yet tried Wild Root Cream Oil, the famous hair tonic that grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose dandruff, then here's a wonderful way to get acquainted. Buy Wild Root Cream Oil in the new 25-cent size bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. Also, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, here it is, Sam. And not that it made any difference, but how did you guess that she wasn't Mrs. Kilcorse?
Simple. Kilcorse didn't recognize her.
But Sam, that was after you denounced her.
I did no such thing.
From the report, Sam, in black and white. Quote, why did you tell me you were Kilcorse's wife, unquote. At that point, you assumed that she was not Mrs. Leonard Kilcorse.
I did not. I merely wondered why she had told me.
Well, with all the lies she told, you might have assumed anything she said was totally devoid of truth.
And I did, sweetheart. I did.
Oh, well, that's a relief. I was afraid for a while she'd taken you in.
What's that got to do with the truth?
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Sadie Thompson appeared as Lorraine Kilcorse. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Score composed by Renee Garrigan. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to...
Get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie. Keeping all the gals away.
Hiya, Baldy.
Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hiya, Baldy, indeed. Adventures of Sam Spade and the Hot 100 Grand Caper from 1948. Well, it's music time now, and Frank Sinatra will be doing the honors. This program's called Songs by Sinatra, and it's from 1946.
Listen to Frank Sinatra.
Night and day, you are the one, only you, neath the moon or under the sun.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Songs by Sinatra.
Attention all radio listeners, here is an important warning. Bob Hope is on our program tonight. We may sing a duet. That's all, brother.
Gee, boss, you know, that's mighty decent of you warning them like that. It'll give them time to get out of the house and into the street. You're sure a right guy, boss.
Well, Marv, you know what my motto is. Quid non mortalia pectora cogis.
Well, what's that?
That's Latin for your father's mustache.
boss, you sure are a card.
I'm a card?
Yeah. Thin and square.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. It's that Bob Hope influence. Neighbors, I shall now sing. In other words, breathe heavily with a musical accompaniment. And Pied Pipers, I'd like to interest you in a half interest. Yuki will be very happy.
Don't forget tonight, tomorrow. Though we may be far apart, if you forget tonight, tomorrow, you'll leave me with a broken heart. Are your kisses only mine to borrow? Say you love me and you will be true. And don't forget tonight, tomorrow. Don't forget that I'm in love with you. Are your kisses only mine to borrow? Say you love me and you will be true. And don't forget tonight, tomorrow. Don't forget that I'm in love with.
Looking into this amazing little invention they call the microphone, where a whisper in New York becomes a whisper in Seattle. And speaking of whispers, here's a little song for you, hey.
I saw you standing in the sun, and you were something to see. I know what I like, and I liked what I saw, and I said to myself, that's for me. A lovely morning, I remarked, and you were quick to agree. You wanted to walk, and I nodded my head as I breathlessly said, that's for me. I left you standing under stars, the day's adventures are true. There's nothing for me but the dream in my heart, and the dream in my heart, that's for you. Oh, my darling, that's for you. Nothing for me but the dream in my heart, and the dream in my heart that's for you. Oh, my darling, that's for you.
Listen to Frank Sinatra singing, and please, no unnecessary sounds from the F-sharp contingent. Frank Sinatra singing Black Magic.
He didn't make the F-sharp.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that you weave so well. Those icy fingers running up and down my spine. The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine. The same old tingle that I feel inside. And then that elevator starts its ride. And down I go. Round and round I go. Like a leaf that's caught in the tide. I should stay away, but what can I do? I'm a flame with such a burning desire that only your kiss can put out the fire. 'Cause you are the lover I have waited for, the mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, darling, down and down I go. Round and round I go. In a spin, loving the spin that I'm in. Under that old black magic called love.
Thank you, Axel Stordahl. A very fine and lovely arrangement of an expressive song. But on we go, ever nearer to that fatal moment when Robert Hope, old Hook Horn himself, joins me in song. Pied Pipers, grab one off the top shelf and make us hear it, kids.
Start jumping anger tipsy in me.
You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me.
You hear me?
I love all the many charms about you.
About you.
Hey now.
Above all, I want my arms about you.
Don't be a naughty baby.
Papa, please do. My sweet embrace of all you.
about you. Don't drag me, don't be a bring down, mama. Get yourself home. My sweet embrace, love for you.
Thank you, Pied Pipers. Very solid indeed. And now we give you that famous character with the upswept nose, the pride of the G.I. Joes, the lad who knows every gal in Hollywood and gets nose from all of them, Bob Hope.
Thank you, Franklin. Thank you very much. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen?
Hey, she's an old one.
At a little late, Mother, but you were in there. How do you... Nice sketch. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Say, well, sir, here I am on the Sinatra Show, and it reminds me so much of the Old West. Yes, sir, the Sinatra Show, where men are men and women are out front screaming, got an extra ticket, got an extra ticket.
You know, I
get a lot of screams on my show, too, but my network is complaining. It seems they don't allow mice in the studio. Frankie's program goes on at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and I don't know if these girls are anxious to see Frankie or not, but when I came in tonight, I saw an old gray-haired lady waiting in line, so I said, aren't you a little old to be a Sinatra fan? She said, well, I wasn't when I got in line. I wouldn't say that these... Come now, together. And I wouldn't say that these girls want to get a good look at Frankie, but one girl in the audience tonight is using a telescope. Nothing strange about that, of course, except this kid is in the front row. Yes, sir, last Friday, Frankie drove past Hollywood High School and forgot to wave. And for the rest of the day, 1,200 Bobby Sox flew at half-mast. That's down in through there. You know, they say Sinatra appeals to the mother instinct in girls. My mother never squealed at me that way.
Hey, Hope, hey, remember me?
Well, 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 if it isn't his nibs, Mr. Ribs. How are you, Dad?
Well, 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 if it isn't my old pod, Mr. Lard. Flip me some skin, boy. Lend me some skin, will you, old man?
What for? You can't fill up what you've got now.
Tell me, Pot Roast, what's up? Tell me, you been telling any new jokes lately?
Don't start anything you can't finish.
Why not?
Well, look what happened when your mother did it.
But,
Since you asked me, Frankie, things are pretty tough in my racket. You know, the only thing that's getting a laugh these days is, that's a joke, son, that's a joke.
Yeah, I know, Bob, but why don't you do like all the other programs are doing? First they steal it, and then they switch it.
Frankie, that line has been switched more than a bull's tail in fly time. More than a bull's tail in fly time. Take last night, for instance, I turned on my radio, and this is what I heard.
Papa, oh, Papa.
Yes, son?
Papa, tell me, what's a moron?
That's a jerk, son. That's a jerk.
5 minutes later, I tune in a Western melodrama. Percival Poison, the gimlet-eyed gunman, walks into Polecat Pub. There's a bulge in his hip pocket, and the bartender says,
hey there, Percival Poison. What's that there bulge on your hip, a shooting on? And Percival Poison says,
that's a joke, son. That's a joke.
So the barkeep says, let me have a swig of that there stuff, Poison. So he takes a healthy gulp and says, that ain't a bit strong, Poison. What is that there stuff? And Percival Poison says,
"That's a Coke, son, that's a Coke." So, Frankie, you can see why I'm desperate. The gag business has fallen off to one joke. I need a fresh idea.
Got the freshest idea of the year.
Come up.
You go on the radio and tell jokes about me, see?
Uh-huh.
And I'll lay off eating for a few days and get weak and thin.
You look like a fugitive from Dick Tracy right now.
You mean I'm sort of a Diet Smith?
No, but Irma could use you in the other finger of that rubber glove.
Quit clowning, Hope. I'm offering to make you the inventor of the Sinatra joke.
It's a mighty generous offer, Frank, but who in the world would laugh at jokes about a skinny, run-down, emaciated, rickety, anemic, breathless little... Say, maybe you've got something at that.
I'm telling you, Bob, it's the freshest idea of the year. Now, how about it? Do you think you could make people believe that I'm thin and weak?
Leave it to me, Frankie. I'll tell them you put on a tweed suit and Lana Turner tried to knit you into a sweater.
How fresh.
I'll tell him when you were born, the stork didn't bring you in a bundle. He served you on a platter of meatballs.
How fresh.
I'll tell him you're so round-shouldered you use a horseshoe for a coat hanger. And I'll tell him you're so weak that you can't even handle your Rice Krispies.
My snap, crackle, pop? Why not?
The explosions blow you out of the kitchen. Frankie, the Sinatra... The Sinatra joke will have unlimited possibilities.
A word of caution, though, Bob. You'll have to keep certain facts from the public.
What do you mean?
There's a fresh line.
Keep what from... Keep what from the public, Frankie?
Well, the fact that I only look thin, that actually I am wiry and made of iron.
I'll tell them you're wiry and made of copper.
Why is that?
On the side, I'll wrench you out as an extension cord.
How fresh.
But, Bob... I'm supposed to be with you. How fresh. Let's make it with two yolks.
We're not very well in unison tonight. But, Bob, one thing more. In writing Sinatra gags, never, never let the public know that I'm crowding 30 and developing a middle-aged spread.
You developing a middle-aged spread?
Well, take a look. Don't you think I have a little bulge right here?
Say. You do... You do have a little bulge at that. It reminds me... It reminds me of an air bubble in a tube of macaroni, believe me.
And chisel schnoz. Above all, never tell the folks that I keep in grand physical condition.
You're kidding. You mean you exercise, Frank?
Just feel this muscle in my right arm. Bet you never saw an arm like that before.
No, not since the last time I saw Margaret O'Brien in short sleeve. But seriously, Franklin, I don't know how to thank you. These new Sinatra jokes will revolutionize radio. Who knows? They may send Crosby's horses back to the glue factory. And Crosby's shirts to the Goodwill.
And High Time. And Bob, we'll carry over... And High Time.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Where you read it.
Yes, sir.
And Bob, we'll carry over the Sinatra joke into the musical field, won't we? You?
Me? Sir? Why, sure, that I will. And here's how it'll sound. Take it, Bone.
I got it.
Here we go.
Each
drop the
time.
Net.
Each time I see an elephant... Proboscis, or James Durante, that old nose colossus, an eagle's beaks on wings, these foolish things remind me of you.
Are you wearing your belt up here? What is it? Each time I see a straw that someone's sipping, or an umbrella that's all wet and dripping, and when a sparrow sings, these foolish things remind me of you.
I'm thin.
So thin.
What can I do?
I'm sure that you could use the weight that Bing can't seem to lose.
Gladly. Each time I see an egg.
We have rhythm now.
That ain't been hatched yet.
Each time I see a match. That ain't been scratched yet.
The hair that once was Bing. Remind me of you.
That's what we're shouting. These foolish things remind me of you.
There goes one of the big men in this country. Yes, sir. Robin. Thank you.
You know, neighbors, every line of business has its own magazine. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, the electrician, magician, and radio technician. And likewise, the musician. Anyway, I was thumbing through the B-flat section of the show business magazine, Billboard, last night, brushing up on my musical horses. And among those running well up in the money was Symphony, Symphony of Love, Music from Above, How Does It Start? On the inside lane, running well to the front, and no surprise to you, I'm sure, is I Can't Begin to Tell You How Much You Mean to Me. My world would end if ever we were through. And mighty big at the $2 window, a fast starter and a strong all the way. Hey, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. And again, according to Billboard and Variety, too, no doubt, you can put a couple of scooties on this here one and know that it'll get... Two'll get you four, because it's a sure thing. I mean, I'm always chasing rainbows, watching clouds drifting by. My schemes are just like all my dreams, ending in the sky. One of the hottest tips around the Tin Pan Alley track is a steady little filly, very dependable these past several weeks. Kiss me once and kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Haven't felt like this before, since can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. And hey, I got into page 24 of Billboard, and along with Long, Long Time, you know what's up there at the top of England's top 20? Bell-bottom trousers, coats of navy blue. She loves her sailor, and he loves her too. But the point I'm leading up to is this one. Our boy Stordahl, our Surrey with the no fringe on top, our boy Axel, he wrote a song, he did, That's What He Did. In collaboration with Sammy, Saturday Night is the Loneliest Night in the Week, Con. And Paul Weston, Axel knocked out a ditty entitled Day by Day. And from the inside dope, they tell me it's going to be bigger than Van Johnson's trip in the East. Neighbors, Day by Day. Day by day, I'm falling more in love with you. And day by day, my love seems to grow. There isn't any end to my devotion. It's deeper, dear, by far than any ocean. I find that day by day you're making all my dreams come true. And day by day, I want you to know I'm yours alone. And I'm in love to stay. As we go through the years, day by day. Walk Alone, the lovely song from Carousel. When you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high, and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and a sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown. Bob Hope's yo-yo, what goes down has got to come up. And we've come up to the point where we've got to remind you all that it's time to put your dreams away for another day. And I will take their place in your heart, wishing on a star never got you far. Excuse me, hey. I see Bob Hope is leaving. Say, Bob, what's the hurry, Dad?
Well, Frank, I'm going to a lecture.
What a coincidence. I'm going to a lecture, too, Bob.
Really? Who's talking at your lecture, Frank?
Nancy. And she's going to push in my laughing face.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Then I'll have the right to adore. Let your kiss confess this is happiness, darling, and put all your
it's time to put all our old radio recordings back on the shelf for another week. But you join us next week for more of them. We'll be here. Will you? Until next week, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.